Buenos días. Good day. How are you guys doing? Having a good conference so far? So I'm Sean Labrie, and even though I'm wearing the office shirt, I actually work on the Visual Studio team at Microsoft. And so my role is actually, I work on the tools inside of Visual Studio that are targeting both Office and SharePoint. And so today is a great day for me because I get to come and talk to you about all the good things that we've done to make your lives as SharePoint developers easier. So actually, just kind of getting an understanding from my audience. How many folks have done SharePoint development before? Raise of hands. Quite a few of you. And how many of you are web developers who are trying to learn a little bit more about SharePoint? Another good set of hands. Great. So in this talk, I'm going to actually have content kind of targeted at both of you guys. Because with the new app model, the Office and SharePoint team have really simplified things so that web developers can get up to speed really easily. But also, there's a lot of value in there for existing SharePoint developers to transfer their knowledge over to this new app model. So in today's talk, what I'm going to cover is first, I'm going to give you an introduction to the new app model. Has everybody had a chance to see some of the introductory sessions that we've done, either the foundational session on apps for Office and SharePoint, or some of the 0-60 talks? Have you guys seen those? So a few of you. Great. For those of you who haven't, I'm going to give you a brief overview of the new app model, but there's definitely a lot more that you can benefit from actually watching the recordings of those talks. From there, we're going to dive in. Once you have the necessary knowledge, then we're going to dive into building your first app in Visual Studio, and I'll show you what the tools can do and how they've really made things a lot better for you in terms of learning the new app model, but also doing SharePoint development in general. Then we'll do a tour of the app artifacts that that Visual Studio supports for SharePoint development, all of the different kinds of things that we provide. And then we'll spend some time on cloud apps. So cloud apps are these apps for SharePoint that are actually hosted either on Azure or on your own web service. And so I'll show you how Visual Studio makes development for that pretty good. And then we'll wrap up with showing you how to actually do continuous integration with the new Team Foundation service and how that's easier than ever to get set up with SharePoint development than it's ever been. So first, I'm going to go and introduce you to the new app model. So the first thing to think about is that there are three different kinds of UIs or app shapes for SharePoint. And the first one that I like to talk about is the full-page app. Now, this is an app that you can actually get off the Office Store today, the Adlib PDF Publisher. And you can see that this company has actually gone and implemented their own custom UI on top of SharePoint. So it really looks and feels like their company. And when you're in that SharePoint app, you have that feeling like you're working with Adlib PDF Publisher, even though you've installed this app on your own site. But then, when you look more closely at it, you actually see that parts of SharePoint are poking through. The developers at the Adlib PDF Publisher have added the Chrome control at the top of the page, and that shows them or that allows you to navigate quickly back to your SharePoint site, as well as being able to do common settings. This app also has access to your document libraries, so you can actually go and choose some of the docs that you've been working with, and then you can actually choose them to go and publish them to SharePoint. So this is one of the common UI patterns that you'll implement. Actually, you will implement this in every app for SharePoint that you do because you have to have a start page for when people click on the links to the apps. The other two that I'll talk about, which are a little bit more optional, but definitely will be very common in apps for SharePoint. The first one is what we call the app part. So if you've seen some of the foundational sessions, the app part is basically something that you can so when you're editing a site page or editing a page within SharePoint, you can go and drop this part from that app onto that page and surface content from your app to end users. Now, the interesting thing about that is the app part is now implemented as an iframe. And so that iframe hosts a window into your app. So you can see over there the world clock. Everything around that is in your SharePoint site. But inside of the world clock view, that's actually an iframe that's hosting external content that's coming probably from some third-party provider. And so that's a way that you can surface content from your app in SharePoint sites. Now, I call this an app part because that's the the terminology that we've been using for the new app model, and that's how you'll see it in the new UI, where you can actually go and insert the app part. But for those of you who've done SharePoint development, and there was a lot of you in the room, this is basically the analogy to the classic client web part. In fact, the API name is still the same. The other piece of UI that you have access to exposing your app to end users through is through UI commands. So you have the ability to either add items from your app to the ribbon, or you can add menu items down here on the right-hand side. And you actually get to choose based on the priority and the declarations inside of those your code, whereabouts these would appear in the menus. And I'll show you a couple of these in action in a few moments. So seeing as a lot of you haven't had too deep of an exposure to the new app model, the first thing I want to do is kind of give you the conceptual model of how you really should think about it. Now, the first thing is when we were working, or the office team was working on the new app model, what they were really thinking is, how can we make SharePoint not so hard? How can we make SharePoint not so special in terms of development? And so what they really did was they said, how can we get a lot of web developers to be able to just easily use SharePoint? And so the way that they've done this with this new app model is, the way you conceive of it is you're basically creating a web page, or a web application, that hosts all of your business logic, it hosts all of the UI, it can be done in HTML5, JavaScript, but you can bring any website to it. So if you're doing PHP, Ruby on Rails, ASP.NET, you can do whatever you want in those frameworks. Then, the thing that integrates that web application with SharePoint is an XML manifest. And that XML manifest tells SharePoint a lot of things about the web application, those client web parts, the app parts, the start page, what permissions it's going to need. And we'll go into that in detail in a few moments. But really, that's the way that this web application communicates or declares how it interacts with SharePoint, is through that app manifest. And at this high level, you actually see that the app model for Office and the app model for SharePoint are really the same thing in their underpinnings, because that same or a similar app manifest is what you use to host your app in Office as well. So now that we've talked about that foundational level, the next question when you're going to go build your app for SharePoint, and this is a really important question for you to think about up front, is where do I want to host my web application? The first option, and is the best option if you can meet the requirements, is SharePoint hosted. With SharePoint hosted, what that means is that web application is going to be hosted on the SharePoint box itself. Now, the key difference between farm solutions and sandbox solutions, for those of you who've done SharePoint development before, is that no longer can a SharePoint hosted app actually run server-side code. So for SharePoint hosted, you really need to be having all of your code rewritten in HTML5, JavaScript, as well as potentially using some of the declarative artifacts that can also be hosted on SharePoint, like lists, BCS, workflows. For doing some custom logic, workflows actually make a really good option to do a middle tier for your SharePoint hosted app. Now, in a lot of cases, this should be a good option for you, but we also recognize that there's going to be a lot of folks who want to be able to write custom server code. And so that's why the Office team created this class of apps that they call cloud-hosted apps. So you have the same concepts. Oh, actually, I should go back for a second and say, there's two things that I want to talk about in the SharePoint-hosted world. And the first is that there is this concept of a host web. The host web is the SharePoint site that the app is being installed into. This is where the user really thinks about where they log into and the SharePoint site that they interact with. The part underneath it is the SharePoint app web. So when you install an app, it creates a mini SharePoint site hosted within that host site. And that SharePoint app has complete access to everything within that app web. But if it wants to go and talk to the host web, it's going to go and need to declare the permissions that it needs in order to go and talk to that host web. Going back to cloud apps, So now in this cloud app world, you also have the SharePoint host web and app web. But now you have the ability to connect an external website into the SharePoint app. And the ways we've broken down cloud apps is how that website gets provisioned. If you have your own website, like your corporate.com website, and you want to host your site there, if you want to have complete control over the site when it gets upgraded, you want to have full management over it, then you're going to follow this provider-hosted model, where you're in full control of the website. But with great control, you also have a lot of responsibility. And so you are actually going to be needing to manage that website as it gains more users, as the data in it grows. Whereas the Office team has worked on this other model that they call auto-hosting. So every time the app gets installed on a SharePoint site, instead of it connecting to a central provider-hosted server, instead, SharePoint will take the web package that's part of the auto-hosted app and deploy it to Windows Azure websites. So each SharePoint site will have its own dedicated IIS server hosted in Windows Azure websites to communicate to it. So the benefit there is that scalability is handled by the SharePoint auto-provisioning them every time that they get installed. But also, you have less control over the manageability of it. So these are kind of the trade-offs that you'll have to make depending on the applications that you go through. So that's a brief introduction to the app model. We'll see a lot more of these things as I go through the tools, and we should talk a little bit more about them as we go through them. But now I want to talk about the value that we're delivering with the Visual Studio tools. Before I go switch to the next slide, how many of you who were SharePoint developers before, enjoyed setting up your SharePoint configuration for development? There's two people in the room, maybe three people who enjoyed setting it up. How many people hated it? All right, for the three of you who like the old setup, you can still do it. But with the new Visual Studio and the new app model, we actually have introduced a lot more flexibility in the environments that'll make the rest of the room really, really happy. The first thing that we have is what we call remote development. So rather than requiring that SharePoint be installed on the same box as your Visual Studio, you can just go and create a developer site up on Office 365. It'll take 10 minutes, maybe 20 if it's a busy day. And then you go inside of Visual Studio, and you can just go and connect to it, and you can go and develop apps against it. So no SharePoint server setup is required. We also have other options for remote development. So say you're in a company that isn't ready yet to move to Office 365. You can actually set up a central SharePoint server for your dev team to all go and work against on premises. And this, you get the same great remote development experience. You can also set up SharePoint on the same machine, as I was saying before, and you can do development for apps with this, and this is still the way that you would do solution development. So farm solutions and sandbox solutions, you would do it that way. Now, the tools that we've provided were not actually part of Visual Studio 2012 when they shipped, and so you can follow this link down here in order to get the extensions that allow you to target Office and SharePoint 2013 here. Or, as of yesterday, the tools have been included in Visual Studio 2013. So if you guys are downloading the 2013 preview, you can also acquire them that way. So I think I've done enough slides for a few minutes, and now I think it's better to actually show you the Visual Studio in action. And so I'm going to switch to Visual Studio 2012. Now, the experience that I'm showing you today is very, very similar to the one that you'd actually get in Visual Studio 2013. But I just wanted to show you in the tools that you have likely in front of you that you can go and use right away. So what I'm going to do is pull up the new project dialog. And the first thing that you'll notice that we've changed is that there's no longer an Office node and a SharePoint node. There's just an Office and SharePoint node itself. As the we've been modernizing the development platforms for Office and SharePoint, we recognize that they really belong together, and you're going to see a lot of overlap between the way we approach the app for Office model and the app for SharePoint. And the first of that is that you'll see that we've actually put them together in one category that we just call apps. You still have your SharePoint solutions. In fact, these have been updated for 2013, as well as your VSTO for 2013 as well. But for apps, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go and create a simple app for SharePoint. Now, the canonical app that I'm going to create is something that allows you to quickly and easily track tasks. And so I'll just call it my task app. And I'll give it a funny number just in case I have a demo one that's already there. And so you'll get this new project wizard. And the first thing it allows you to do is it allows you to give it a name. And so I don't want the project name to shine through, so I'll just get rid of that 22. The next item is probably the more interesting one for you folks. And this is actually pointing to my SharePoint site. Let me see if I can actually pull it up. And so this is my SharePoint developer site up in Office 365 that I basically went up to dev.office.com, signed up for, and it was provisioned for me in about 10 minutes. From there, it set me up as an admin, so I can just go and plug in this URL. I can validate the connection, make sure that I'm ready to do development. And now I can go and actually deploy that app to SharePoint. Before I create it, I have to finish creating it, though. So remember how I was talking before about the three options for where you host your web application? SharePoint hosted, auto hosted, and provider hosted. This is the dropdown where you go and choose them. And you really want to try to get this one right at the start of your development, but we do allow you to switch in between them if you make a change later. So for this app, I'm going to start really simple and show you how to do client-side code as with declarative artifacts. So I'm going to do SharePoint hosted. And I go click finish. And here you're going to see the new app for SharePoint. Now, for those of you who've done SharePoint development before, you'll still see that we have the features and packages node, although they seem to be very much less important in the new app model. And our tools have tried to really abstract the need to actually go in these designers any further. The real key meat of this is all in the web content. So we provide a content node with the CSS, some default images to start with. We provide you with an app icon that's ugly so that you'll go and replace it. And then we have the pages. And these are the pages are where the heart of your application lies. Now, before, I told you, hey, we can't put server-side code on a SharePoint-hosted app. And yet, here I am showing you a default ASPX page. Don't let the extension fool you. This is only client-side code, but there are a few capabilities that SharePoint has lit up that you can go and use controls that come from SharePoint. So I can, for example, use an XSLT list view. I can go and use a people picker from within these pages. I cannot go and add my own third-party controls. If I want to have third-party controls, then I need to move to either they need to be purely HTML, or I need to move to one of the cloud-hosted or the cloud app models. Let's see. The other thing is you cannot write inline VB and C# code. If you try, you'll get a compile error. If you try to deploy it, we will reject the VB and C# code. So if you want to go and write that, then again, you would need to go to the cloud-hosted model. So now we've talked about the web application part, which was the first part of that app model. Now I want to talk about the application manifest. So on the first tab, you'll see a lot of the same properties that we declared when we first went and created the app, as well as being able to go and change the icon. One of the key things about this app manifest is setting the start page. And this is the page that gets launched when the user goes into SharePoint, clicks on the app tile, and it launches. The second thing on after the start, or the next thing after the start page, is the query string. This query string is what gets appended to the URL when you invoke the app for SharePoint from SharePoint. And this can tell, what this basically can tell folks is some information about the SharePoint site that it came from, as well as the user who was logged in, and potentially some other parameters that you want to go and pass in. We put in the standard tokens by default, but there's a lot more that you can go and add. And here is the entry point for going to changing the hosting type. So SharePoint hosted, auto hosted, or provider hosted. You could make this change here, and it would go and change the shape of your app. The second tab on the app manifest is what allows you to specify permissions that this app needs. So remember, I was talking about how in the app web, the web that site that gets created when you deploy your SharePoint app, it has full control over. So if you're operating on lists or workflows or anything within that app web, you don't need to declare permissions. The only time you really need to declare permissions is when you're going and connecting to resources that are in the host web. So for example, if I wanted to connect to a list that was in the host web, then I would need to go and request permissions here. And we provide a UI that gives you access to most of the key permissions that you would typically use. The other permission that's on this app manifest is to allow the app to make app-only calls to SharePoint. And what that means is that in some cases, your app may be running in the background, there may not be a current user logged in, and yet the app still needs the ability to interact with the SharePoint site in some way. So by checking that checkbox, that's how you enable your app to do that and have that permission to do that. You can also specify some of the prerequisites. So for example, if you're doing an auto-hosted app, which requires either a SQL database or a Windows Azure website, you can declare those here. Again, when we use our wizard, this tends to put these values in for you. But if you need to go and tweak what's put in here, you can have that as well. Localization of SharePoint apps is also supported through the next tab of supported locales. So if you go and use this dropdown and choose a locale, what we'll do is we'll add the right resource files so that you can go and localize your app. And if you're building an app that you intend to go and release through the Office Store, you must specify the locales that it supports. And the reason that we didn't just go and add locales by default for you is that once you specify one locale, it will only install on SharePoint sites that support that locale. So if you're working in a corporate environment where, you know, your app may not be localized, but it may be installed in multiple SharePoint sites of multiple languages, then leave this for blank until you've really decided that you want to go and do the full localization pass over your app. And the final tab on the app manifest is remote endpoints. Now, remember I was talking about how in SharePoint hosted apps, all of the code is running client-side. And sometimes you still need access to server resources. And so sometimes you may have a need to make cross-site scripting calls. And in some cases, JSONP may not be the right solution to that problem. Well, the nice thing is SharePoint has actually built in a proxy so that you could declare websites that you want your client-side code to call through to and have access to, and you can just go and add them and declare them here. All right, so now, talked a lot about the manifest. Why don't I show you some of the experiences that we have around creating lists and showing that to the user. So what I'm going to do for my task application is I'm going to go and add a task list. And when I go and right-click on the SharePoint app, you'll see all of the different artifacts that we allow you to go and add to your app for SharePoint. The lists are actually the most popular, and so we put it right at the top of the list. And so I'm going to call this my task list. And what it's going to do is it's going to allow me to either create a customizable list template based on a template that we have put in our tools, or I could just create an instance based on an existing list. Now, I want to do some cool customizations of my list. So what I'm going to do is a template that's based on the task template. What I'm going to do is click Finish, and pretty quickly, a wizard comes and pops up. And so here you can see, by default, all the things that are in this list template that came from tasks. So I have the task name, the predecessors, the priority. And we actually allow you to go in and choose and customize these for your own needs. So for example, the priority already has a choice. So I can use my designer to go in here. And I can actually go and add an item to the priority list. So I want a lower priority, and I'll just call it level 4 and give it a priority of never. So we allow you to go and richly customize these lists. I don't know if you've done this for SharePoint 2010, if you did this before these tools, but before it actually used to be a lot of hand tuning of XML, a lot of trial and error, and a lot of looking for documentation that may or may not exist. And so we hope that we've provided with this list designer tools that allow you to get most of these common customizations done really quickly. I can also go and customize the views. So that priority item that I went and created before, or I modified before, I want that actually to show up in the default view. So I can just go and choose and add it here. The other nice thing that we've done is we have a tab that gives you a little bit of an overview of the list. And the most valuable thing on this for me is that it tells you the list URL that's site relative. So I don't actually have to guess at it. So I can just copy it so that when I need to use it later, I can go and do that. So now I've gone and created a list. Now I want to show it to my users. Now, I could have changed my start page of my app to just go and point at that list, but I really want to build an experience that's around it. So what I'll do is I'll just put it in the context of the default page that I start with. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to clear out some of the placeholder text that we have. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to insert a snippet that allows me to go and display a list that comes from SharePoint. So we have two snippets today. Hopefully we'll be expanding that list of snippets over time. But this SP list view one inserts an XSLT list view web part, which is SharePoint for I want to display a list in my SharePoint app. So the key thing that you need to go and fill in here is the list URL. And now I've done that. Whoops. And so now I actually have an app for SharePoint that will host my task list. So now I'm ready to go an F5 and deploy this to my developer site. And so what this is doing is it's taking all the artifacts that were in the app project and it's putting them in an app package. And an app package, if you guys want to go and open it up later, is actually a zip file that contains all of those artifacts. And so it's really a simple OPC package that you can go and work with. And what it's done is it's deployed it up to the SharePoint site, and SharePoint has gone and created an app web for it. And you can tell that this app is hosted in the app web because, because it's not hosted on its own domain. It's actually hosted in a separate, isolated domain here. The reason that they do this is so that the SharePoint hosted app is isolated from the host web. Remember before I was saying that you needed to declare the permissions that you need? Well, we didn't want to create a cross-site scripting attack to get around those permissions. And so the Office team will create this isolated domain for the SharePoint app. So now you can see that I have my tasks and I have my priority showing up in the list. And what I can do is I can just go and add a simple new item. So I'll just call it task 1. And I will just go and give it that special priority of never. Oops. And there you can see that it's been updated. So now that I have a basic taskless app for SharePoint that's working, I want to show off some of the new capabilities that we've built into the tools to make your edit, compile, debug cycle a little bit faster. You saw when I deployed the F5, it was pretty fast. It was probably like 15 seconds. But that can kind of cut down when you're really you're doing a lot of web development. You really just want to iterate on the page. You really want to see the result really quickly. So what we've done is we've actually allowed a fast update to happen. And so if I wanted to replace that list view with a more advanced UI, let's just call it the H1 tag, and we'll say Buenos Dias Teched. I hit save. When I hit save, you see the little orange down here went communicating with SharePoint. And what that did is it actually went and updated the page live on SharePoint. So all I need to do is switch back, reload the page, and you'll see that it's been updated. And so we've actually implemented a huge amount of fast updates for apps for SharePoint. And so we're hopefully finding that your iterative development is a lot faster this way. All of the artifacts that are like CSS, JavaScript, HTML, ASPX should be updatable in this way. The way I remember it is the items which are code, not designers, are the ones that update quickly. If you update something via a designer, unfortunately, you need to pull back the app and go and reinstall it. But we've really made the development experience faster in this way. All right. So now that I've shown a bit of the Visual Studio tools, I think it's better that we switch back into the talk a little bit about the app artifacts that are supported. So I actually, as part of my demo, I went over all of the key points about the app manifest. But this is really the thing that's uniquely new for the new app model that you need to think about as you're publishing for either the Office Store or for your own corporate app catalog. We've also talked about the list designer, which allows you to go and define custom list instances and list definitions, and allows you to go and really specify what views are available. We also have similar support for content types, where you can go and configure the columns and define your own support there. The nice thing about the list and content type designers is that they don't only apply to the new app model, but you can also use them for your farm and sandbox solutions as well. So if you're doing a lot of development, even for SharePoint 2010, you can make use of this new tooling. With the new app model, there's actually been a lot of improvements around SharePoint workflows. So first, they're now running .NET Framework 4.5 workflows. What that means is that you have a much better declarative syntax for defining the workflows. You get support for the VB and C# expressions when you're developing them. The interesting thing about workflows is that they no longer execute on the SharePoint box anymore. So, you cannot have the custom code that's going and running there. Instead, what they're running on is a service called Windows Azure Workflow Manager. You don't have to worry about the deployment to the Workflow Manager as part of your app development. When you deploy your app to SharePoint, SharePoint takes care of deploying that workflow off to Workflow Manager. But you're going to see that it's a much more scalable host for workflows. And if you're setting it up on-prem, you'll probably want to dedicate a box to it. But if you are deploying it in Office 365, those resources get provisioned for you already. So with our tooling, we've tried to create a great end-to-end experience around developing workflows. So we allow you to create both site and list workflows via templates. We provided you with a rich interactive designer. So we've actually taken all of the key activities that are available for SharePoint and made sure that in the designer surface that you have a good experience when you're configuring those activities for usage within the SharePoint site. We have templates that allow you to go and create the initiation and association forms, as well as going and creating your own custom activities for use on SharePoint. We also have support for interactive debugging if you're running on your local machine or if you're debugging against a remote SharePoint server that's hosted on-prem. We currently don't support remote debugging of workflows against Office 365, but it's very high on my list to make that happen sometime soon. Our tooling also provides great support for business connectivity services. So if you've defined B2C models in the past, we've actually feel like we've come up with a much nicer experience within Visual Studio to make it easier for you. We've actually gone and made it based on the content type designer that we've talked about earlier. But basically, what we do through a wizard is we allow you to go and specify the OData source that you're working against. It has either anonymous authentication or with basic auth. Connect up to that data source, that OData source, and what we'll do is we'll figure out what columns that are available through that and provide you with an experience to go and customize which ones you make available as part of your app and exposed as part of your app web. So we have a very easy way to get started there. We also have a wizard for going and creating these app parts or these client web parts. And as I was saying before, these are basically great ways to shine through your app into the host web and provide these live tiles for your customers to kind of get a view into the app as well as an entry point into it. And so I'm going to go into a demo in a minute about this, so I'm not going to go too much into detail right now. The other ones that we support are also the UI custom actions. These are this is the terminology we use for the ribbon commands and the menu items. And as I showed you in some slides earlier, you have that ability to make those items appear up on that ribbon or the item menu that appears when you're interacting with items on the list. And for those of you who've done SharePoint development before, you may know this as the ECB or the edit control block. So if you're looking for documentation around that, that term edit control block is how you go and find that. Don't need to worry about too many of the details of this because we have a wizard that goes and generates all of the complex XML for you. So now that I've done that, I've talked about that, let's go actually do a demo of some of the common app shapes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take another project, which is essentially the next version of my quick task or my task application. You'll see over here in the Solution Explorer that it is essentially the same app. I have a list definition and a list instance, and I have a simple page in it. But when I hit F5 on it, you'll see that we've added a lot more to make this app a little bit more modern and to use some of the more common web technologies. So we've added support for uses of jQuery, we've added a knockout library to it, we have implemented some MVVM, and basically showing how SharePoint development is really more about web development. And so what we have is a new UI that we've gone and implemented in the knockout framework so that I can do like add task 1, add task 2, add task 3, and then I can have some rich animations with the jQuery UI to allow people to go and reorder them. So this shows you like some of the power that you have with your own custom web development. So now what I want to do with these with this quick task app is I want to go and add an app part that allows you to determine how many tasks that you have remaining. So what I'm going to do is go back to my project, add new item, and instead of the list item, I'm going to go all the way down to near the bottom and choose the client web part. And I'm going to call it tasks remaining. I'm going to add it. And in the wizard, we allow you to either choose to create a new page, which is going to be the one that surfaces in the tile, or if I had an existing one in my project, then I could have gone and chosen that. I don't already have anything in the project that would make sense as a web part, and so I'm just going to create a new one. And you'll see that we've added two things to the project. The first is the elements XML file that has some of the common properties here. And so I can go and edit these rather obvious properties. So if I wanted to change the title to just call it tasks remaining, I can do that. I can, you know, change the description. The tasks I have left. And I can go and customize it that way. For my page, what I want to do is I want to have it go and surface the tasks or the number of tasks that I have remaining. So what I'm going to first do is I'm going to go and add some script to it. So add support for some of the jQuery, some of the AJAX, and the knockout that was part of my larger application. And then in the body, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to insert a div element that will be a placeholder until the elements that are remaining have been calculated. From there, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and add some JavaScript that will actually go and calculate the tasks that I have remaining. And so instead of going in the Office of SharePoint node, what I'll do is I'll switch to the web node and choose to add a JavaScript file. And I'll call it quick task and add that. And I'll actually go and place it under the scripts folder so that it doesn't, so that it is neat and tidy. And then what I'll do is I will go and add this snippet that has the code that does the callback to SharePoint. And so basically, when the page is loaded, what it's going to do is it's going to dispatch a call to get the client context to understand what the current user is. And based on that, it's going to go get the task count for the current user. And what we've implemented this is using a simple CAML query that you, if you've done a lot of SharePoint development before, is very familiar to you. And based on that, what we'll do is we'll go and update that div tag to have the number of tasks that are remaining. So that was rather straightforward. And so I'm going to hit F5 to go and start that again in the debugger. And because I went and changed some declarative artifacts, some of the things via the wizard, the client web part, it's actually going to do a retract of the existing app. If I had any task data in that app, that data is going to be lost, but then it's going to go install a new one. So when you're doing development, you're obviously not going to be doing development against your live data, because your live data, you would not want to host inside the app while you're doing development. You'd really want to have a way to populate the sample data. And so now it's going and it's installing up to the Office 365 developer site. And so now I want to show you how to go and add that app part. So remember, this, when I'm working here, I'm working within the app web. And I really wanted to surface that client web part in the host web so that the users would really get access to it. So what I'll do is I'll click on the page, click Edit. And here is where I get the insert menu that allows me to choose to insert either classic web parts or the new app parts. So I'm going to choose the new app parts, and I'll see that my tasks remaining one appears here, and you'll see the description shows up. So I'll click Add. And even while I'm editing, you can actually get a live preview of what this app part looks like. And so you'll see that they went and queried, and it said, oh, wow, I have no tasks remaining, because I didn't go and enter any of those tasks in. I can click Save. And then that page has been updated, and it will have a live view of the tasks that I, as a user, have remaining whenever I go back to that page. So that was a simple demo of going and creating an app part. The next thing that we will move on to is going and adding a menu item. And for this one, as part of my task app, I want to create an easy way for my users to flag a document for follow-up. So what I'm going to do is I want to add a menu item on that document when I'm working with that document that allows me to go and flag it. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go and add a menu item custom action, and I'm going to call it add task. And in the wizard, I get asked a series of questions. The first is, do I want to choose the host web or the app web? Well, the important thing about answering this question is, where is the document that I'm going to be working against? Where is it going to live? Is that document going to be part of my app, or is it going to be part of the host web that the app is installed into? Now, the documents I have are already populated in the host site, and that's where I expect most of my users to want to be able to interact with it. And so I'm going to go and choose the host web. Then we allow you to choose what the action is scoped to. Is it the template? The kind of thing, like a document library, or is it the instant, a specific document library, content type or file extension? So we allow you to go and choose those. Because I want this to apply all document libraries, I'm just going to choose the list template. And then we have a list of artifacts that you could associate it with. So I'm going to choose the document library, click Next, and then I can choose my menu item text. So I'll call it Add Task. And I'm going to let it point to the default page within my SharePoint app. Click Finish, and you'll see that it's added just one artifact to the solution. And this is the elements XML that represents the menu item I just created. So that wizard basically just generated this for me. There's a couple of small tweaks that I'll probably want to make this a little bit more usable. For example, the sequence of 10,001 puts it very much at the end of the list, and the lists are already quite long. So I want to advance it to the top, so I'll choose 101. And figuring out what the right sequence is a matter of trial and error right now, but definitely experiment with it. The other thing that we have is the URL that gets invoked when you click on that menu item. And you'll see that we've included a few things by default. So for example, the standard token, so you have the context that's coming from SharePoint. The SP list ID, we also added the SP list item ID and the SP list ID because those are common things that you would need. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go and add the item URL because it's a convenient thing for, because you can also go and add other properties, but it's also a convenient way for me to write my particular app. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to add a little bit of JavaScript that goes and adds the task when it is when it detects that parameter. And so let me just add it quickly. I'm going to add a function that adds the tasks, and then at the end of the file, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to add some of the JavaScript to add the new tasks. And what it does is it basically parses the URL that got invoked for the menu item, and then it adds a task with the title of the document. So again, I'm going to go and hit F5, and I'm going to deploy the app for SharePoint. And sometimes this takes a few seconds, and sometimes it takes a few more. Yeah, 6 seconds this time. Again, it had to do the uninstall and reinstall because I added a declarative artifact. Had I just been doing a code change, it probably could have been faster. So for this one, I'm going to go back to my host web, to the Microsoft Corporate Teams site, go to my document library, and here you'll see that when I interact with the menu items, I will actually have the add task item show up. When I click it, you'll see that I get all of my parameters added to, including the information about the document, added to the URL, and it got processed by my application and now added a task to my task list. So those were some simple demos of the app shapes that we can do. Now I'm going to switch back to some slides. Oops. And now we're going to talk about cloud apps. So if you remember from earlier in presentation, cloud apps are the ones where you actually have a custom website that has the potential to run server code hosting it. Oops, let me get my real clicker. There are three ways in our tools to go and create cloud apps. The first and the most obvious way is through the new application wizard. So when you create that new app, there's that dropdown that you can go and choose. However, if you decide later that you need that custom server code, there are two ways to go and get that. One, you can go and add an app event, either an event remote event receiver or an app event, to the project. When you do that, we will actually automatically inside of Visual Studio go and generate that web project for you. The other way is what I call appetizing a web project. If you have a custom-built website already that you want to expose to your users as a SharePoint site, you can just go and right-click on that web project inside of Visual Studio and say, add an app for SharePoint. And what we'll do is we'll turn that website into an app for SharePoint. And when you hit F5, you'll actually get a basic integration with your SharePoint site. Now, that web application knows nothing about SharePoint. You would have to go and write code to make it have any deeper integration. But at least there's a start of being able to integrate there. One of the key considerations about these cloud apps is the communication between the web project and SharePoint. Now that they're no longer hosted on the same box, establishing trust is actually a more difficult consideration. And so the first thing you need to know is that we think about, we use OAuth as the mechanism of securing those communications. So both the web project and SharePoint trust a third-party provider, or a third provider, which is Windows Azure Access Control Services. It's actually a Microsoft service, it's not third-party, but it is a third-party to the web project and SharePoint. And how it does that is that there is this concept of a client ID and a client secret. And when you put your app either in the Office Store or when you use AppRegNew, which is a functionality of SharePoint, it can generate these client IDs and client secrets that get placed inside your app for SharePoint as well as the web project so they will know about each other. The flow for authentication can be rather complex, And I definitely recommend spending some time with the documentation after after having done a little bit of trying with the app for SharePoint development. But I wanted to give you a quick overview of the token flow so that you have the general idea of how to go and approach this. So when SharePoint, when you click on a tile in SharePoint for your app part or for your app and it launches, what happens is that SharePoint goes to ACS with that client ID and it grabs a context token that really represents that user in that session. And that SharePoint server will then take that context token, hand it to the web application. Now, the web application doesn't know to trust it or not. So what it does is it sends that context token back to ACS. And ACS validates that that's the correct one. And in response, gives the web application an access token. And that access token then enables the web application to call back into SharePoint and access SharePoint resources on behalf of that app, on behalf of that user. And so that is the basic flow to think about. The nice thing is that our tools actually provide you with a library that simplifies a lot of this, and our templates are set up by default to have some code that automatically calls back into SharePoint so that you get this flow by default. Another thing that was interesting for us when we were looking at this new app model, especially around the idea of cloud apps, is figuring out how we can deliver the magical debugging experience that you guys expect from Visual Studio. You guys expect F5 to just work. You expect your breakpoints to just be hit. Well, with everything being hosted up in Office 365, that actually posed quite the challenge to us. And so the things that the design that we ended up coming up with is that we bring all of the code artifacts locally in order for you to debug them. So even though your app for SharePoint is being deployed up to SharePoint, the web project is actually being deployed to your local IIS server, IIS Express server. If you had a database that was part of your app for SharePoint, instead of it going up to SQL Azure, it's living on LocalDB on the local machine. Getting a client ID and a client secret can be a little bit of work and something that you typically do only on publishing to the Office store. So to work around that, we actually go and generate a client ID and client secret every time you F5. And so you get that temporary one. And from this, we've delivered a really good debugging experience for all the different types of apps. One of the key functionalities that I talked a little bit about earlier was this idea of an event receiver. And that's specific to the cloud apps, being able to have those custom code that runs on them, runs when these events happen. There's these two types. One is the remote event receivers, which happen whenever you make changes or add, update, or delete items. And then there's app events, which happen when an app is installed, uninstalled, or upgraded, and upgraded is missing from this list. So what happens is when SharePoint detects one of these events has happened, what it does is it issues a SOAP call to an endpoint that is listening for it. These are typically implemented within your web project. And we actually, as part of our tooling, provided an experience for going and creating that. And I'll show you that in a minute. The challenge for us when providing a debugging experience, though, is that you now have a service up in the cloud that is trying to call back to your developer box. And so in a lot of cases, you'll have a firewall that actually blocks that call back. So our solution in this case is we actually allow for Office 365 and our developer tools to use Windows Azure Service Bus to open that communication between Office 365 and the IIS Express on the local box. So if you guys are MSDN subscribers, and I expect a lot of you are, you actually get a free amount of Service Bus with the lowest level of MSDN. And the amount that gets used for these debugging sessions typically is of the order of pennies, which will probably not even hit your total credit that you have for the month. If you don't have Service Bus, it really is a simple thing to sign up for individually, and the cost of this debugging is quite low. So that's a little bit about the debugging experience, and I'll go into that in a minute. But remember when I was saying we were bringing all these artifacts locally? Well, that introduces some problems where you want to actually go and try how things are going to run in their real environment. And so we added this command that we call deploy.
And what deploy does is it actually will put the artifacts, rather than on the local machine and the local instances, it will actually deploy them to the real servers. You lose your ability to debug things that are not running in the browser, like the client-side code. You lose the ability to debug that server code or to see what's going on with the database directly. But you get to see what your app is going to run like in more in its real environment. And so that deploy command is supported for SharePoint-hosted and auto-hosted apps. When it's provider-hosted, we don't necessarily know what your website you're actually going to deploy it to is, so we don't have support for deploy for that. Finally, one last thing before I switch back to a demo is we have support for publishing. And publishing is actually pretty easy for all of the different app types. For SharePoint and auto-hosted, it's actually a one-screen wizard that just goes and publishes the app project into a folder. And then when you take that app package, you can either deploy it to your corporate app catalog for use internally, or you can deploy it to the Office Store, but you have to put it through the Office Store validation process. For provider-hosted, we actually have a much better experience now in the Visual Studio 2013 preview. But basically, you will need to publish your app, and then you'll also have to publish your web project separately, because you're the one who's responsible for deploying your web project to the provider host and the app project either to the corporate app catalog or to the Office Store. You can also publish them on separate cadences is another reason that those things have been separated. In Visual Studio 2013, we've created a publishing center that allows you to see all the different options that you have and work from there. All right, so now I'm going to go switch into a quick demo of remote event receivers. Oops. Do I have it? All right. So now I'm going to switch over to a contact list application that has been implemented as a cloud app. Now, you'll see in Visual Studio that the shape of the projects have changed because it is a cloud app. You'll see here that I have my app for SharePoint. And these are all of the artifacts that are destined to be hosted on SharePoint. So you'll see that I have the list, which is my contacts, the icon, and the app manifest. The heart, or the logic of my app is actually hosted inside of the web project, where I have my pages and my scripts that are running custom server code. And so you can really see before, remember when I showed you that picture of having the web application and the app manifest being separate? We've tried to really model that in our tools so that concept kind of comes through as well. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you this contact list app in action. And what we've done is sent those app parts, the parts from the app up to Office 365. And the web project was just hosted on the local IIS, and we'll see that in a moment. So now that it's done that, you'll see that I get prompted with a, do you trust this contact list application? Because my application requested certain permissions in order to interact with the host web, now the users have to actually make a choice to go and trust it. And it tells them some of the things that it wants, like it wants information about the site and about the users. So I click Trust It, and now I will see my app. Before, when I was doing a SharePoint host app, I got a lot of that SharePointed feeling for free almost because it was hosted on SharePoint. In this app, I get the Chrome control at the top because I've gone and added it to my project. And so you'll see a lot of our sample code, a lot of our sample projects have the Chrome control added to it by default. And that's what really gives it that top banner, but it also affects the fonts and the styles that are within the app itself. So for this contact list app, what I'm going to do is have it take a name, and when I add the contact, it's going to go and do some complex server-side processing. And you can imagine all sorts of complex processing you would do when you add a contact. But to keep things simple, keep it understandable, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to have it do the complex processing on the server B to calculate the full name. And you'll see that if I refresh this, that it actually hasn't been implemented yet. It's still at processing. So now, let's go and add a remote event receiver to go and do that complex processing. So what I'm going to do is right-click on the app project, choose New Item, choose Remote Event Receiver, and I'm going to call that Added Item. Again, in our wizards, we try to provide you with all the list of options that we would commonly need. So you can choose either to have events that happen on list items or the whole list itself. For this one, the list items makes the most sense. We know what all of the lists are that are in your project as well as in the host web, and so we can allow you to choose from that event source. So what I'm going to do is choose my contacts, and then I can choose from the different events. Now, the tricky thing to know here is that some of these events are synchronous and some of them are asynchronous. So, for example, an item is being added, gives you an opportunity while that item is being added to go and implement your custom logic. The penalty, though, for being synchronous is that you have about 60 seconds to return from that call or the event receiver will have failed. And so you need to make sure that your processing is quick. Now, because my processing is going to be complex, what I'm going to do is instead of the item is being added, I'm going to go to the after the fact that an item was added. So I'm going to click Finish on that. And you'll see that we have implemented some of the, or that it's inserted the code that's going to go and handle this. So we have code here already for processing the event, and you can see how some of the sample code already goes and gets that client context. Remember when I was talking about the context that the tokens went from to SharePoint to the web project and from ACS? This code kind of helps you get started with that. Now, since I'm doing an asynchronous event, then the process, I'm going to use the process one way because I don't actually have any return value that comes back to it. What I'm going to do is insert my own code here. What it does is it gets that remote event receiver client context, figures out which type of, or make sure it's the right type of item added, and then it goes and gets the first name, gets the last name, calculates the full name. Then it looks up the list that it wants to go and modify. Then it updates it, and only here, with the client context execute query, does it then go and talk back to SharePoint in order to go and update that item in the list. So now, I want to actually go and debug this. So I want to go set my breakpoint here, make sure that this is working. And the thing that I've done, and I'm just going to resize the window a little bit, the thing that I've done is I've gone into my properties on my SharePoint project. And on the SharePoint tab, you'll see all the way at the bottom that there's this option here for enable remote event debugging. In here, I've put my connection string for my Windows Azure Service Bus, and it's obfuscated a little bit so that I didn't give out my whole password to folks. But you'll see, basically, this is what's going to allow Office 365 to go and connect back to my dev box and for that breakpoint to be hit. All right, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go hit F5, and we're going to go and see if this remote event receiver works and if this breakpoint can get hit. Now, I call this my scariest demo, because what's going to happen is I'm going to go and click on the update contact or add contact. It's going to send a note to Office 365. That is going to process that event, start adding that contact. It's going to fire off a SOAP service that's going to call through to Windows Azure Service Bus. Well, Service Bus is then going to call that through to my local dev box. I'm going to do some processing that's then going to go and update Office 365 all over conference connectivity. So let's hope this works. So again, you see I have my contact list. I'm going to add my name. Spell it right, and then I can go and add contact. And you can see it's added the contact, and the breakpoint got hit. Now, what I'm going to do is, I get all the full debugging that you would expect. So I can just hit F10, go step through it, and everything is working fine. So I hit F5, and let it execute. So now, when I refresh my contacts, you can see that my full name has been calculated. But you also see that I have a bug in there. Now, this bug would have been really difficult for me to go and track down if I had, didn't actually have this debugging capabilities. But I had that breakpoints before that I had set. The nice thing is I'm actually using Visual Studio Ultimate. So I actually already am running IntelliTrace while this was happening. So I don't even need to go and start a new debug session to go and figure out what the bug was. I can actually go back to my debugger, and I can actually go and, let's see, go back in time, and this allows me to actually go and step back through the code, and I can see what happens as each of these items get set. So I can see my first name got set to Sean in this line. I can see my last name got set here. I can see the full name got set to Labrishon. Oh, this is where the bug is. And then I can go and see the pretty obvious bug happened here. So one of the really nice things about the new app for SharePoint model is SharePoint isn't different anymore. And so all these functionalities like IntelliTrace just work for SharePoint development. So you're going to get a lot more of the standard Visual Studio web development experience because SharePoint development isn't different anymore. So that's pretty good. And now I'm going to switch back and cover one final subject. Continuous integration. And I have about 9 minutes to go through this, so I'll be a little bit quicker on it. So with continuous integration, what this allows is for you to, it allows a development team to collaborate more effectively and iterate more rapidly. What it allows you to do is to set up automated builds that happen every time a developer checks in to validate the quality of that check-in and the quality of the app. When you're doing a lot of development for SharePoint, consistency in environments can often be a problem. And working on one development box versus working on another development box, some differences may occur. But by having a continuous integration that is set up in a central server in a central place, you actually have a really good read on the quality that happens there. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you how to quickly add support for continuous integration for an app for SharePoint. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up a project. Let's see. Demo start. And what this application is it's a simple internal eBay or Craigslist or something like that allows employees to sell kind of classified style items to each other. And in this application, what I really want to do is, what I want to do is I want to actually write a simple unit test that will allow me to validate some of the functionality inside of this app. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and create a standard unit test project and call it a simple unit test. And inside of here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to write a simple test method. And the method itself isn't terribly important. All I'm doing is validating that the email message that is being sent contains a CC address. I'm just going to go and set up the references and that. And then, again, this is all pretty standard web development type things, and so you get the standard behavior for running tests. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go and run all my tests, run this unit test that just occurred, and I'm going to see it working. Or hopefully see it pass. Ah, I seem to have a bug. Well, let me go and see if I can get some insight into what may be causing it. So I'm going to do a go to definition on the method I called. And I can see that I left some commented code in there because I was working with my starter project. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go and delete that. Now I can go and run the test, validate that it passed, and now I'm good. All right, so now I have a little less than 5 minutes to go and set up continuous integration for my project, something that would have normally taken me an entire talk to do. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to be using the new Team Foundation service, and I'm going to go and create a new build definition. So call it my build. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to set it up for continuous integration. I could have had it do manual, like if I wanted to go and initiate them myself, do rolling builds every so often, or on a schedule. But continuous integration is what we're talking about, so that's what I'm going to do. And I want to make sure that I have the right things in my project. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure... I forgot to add this to source control. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add this to source control. Just checking it in. I'm just going to create a new build. Okay. Oops. Go there, builds. What I'm going to do is new build definition. It's got the name of the project in there, continuous integration. The source settings are almost correct. Yeah, it's correct. I got the deployment scripts that I need. And then it has the project that I wanted. So for the build defaults, what I could choose is the hosted build controller. And this is a build controller that's hosted up in TFS that is for use. But because I wanted this to actually go and make it happen more quickly, I'm going to use a build controller that is actually hosted in Azure IaaS that one of my team members set up for me. But TFS hosted service is definitely an option for you. For the process, one of the things that we've done is we've gone and put up on CodePlex site that I'll show you a link to later, a new process template for Office and SharePoint apps that basically does all the right things for you. And it allows you to choose a deployment script. And that deployment script is also provided as part of the CodePlex site that will deploy this app for SharePoint. So I hit save on it. And then I just want to go and queue it off to happen immediately, just in case it isn't already going. And so here, you can see that it's the controller is starting to run my build, or it should be. Let me just do a refresh. Ah, shoot, there's a mapping. All right. This demo had a small issue with it just right before the session, so I was hoping that it would have resolved itself by the time I got back to it, but apparently it is not. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go and switch back to slides. But what you would have seen was, what you would have seen was that it would actually have deployed that app up to Office 365, would have run the tests on the local on the Team Foundation server. And validated those results and given you a validated check-in or given you a message that it said that it hadn't. It is super easy for you to actually get started with the Team Foundation service. So you can just go up to teamfsvisualstudio.com, sign up for a free preview. You can go and try it out, just kind of like I was going through it there. We have our scripts stored on the Office SharePoint CI-CodePlex.com website. Feel free to go and take them from there. Feel free to update them if you find that there's valuable changes you want to go and do there. It's really simple to go and write a test, go and check in. I almost got it done in this session. Oops. The other thing I wanted to call your attention to is that as of yesterday, we now have a developer desktop available in Azure Infrastructure as a Service. So if you're an MSDN subscriber, you can actually now go up to Azure IaaS and create a Visual Studio Ultimate Preview VM. The nice thing about these VMs is that they actually have a SharePoint 2013 trial installed on them. So if you're doing classic SharePoint development or new app model development, you can go and use these VMs if you don't want to have the setup on premises. So if you're not ready for Office 365, but you still want to be able to get some of the benefits of the cloud, this is another option for you guys. All right. Oops. It's not. So in summary, I've gone over a bunch of the support that we have in the new app model. There's definitely a lot more that you guys can learn, so definitely check out some other sessions. We support both Office 365 and local SharePoint server, covered remote development, all the app artifacts, and a brief introduction to continuous integration. I'm definitely available to show you more of that either at the booth later today or actually probably tomorrow. Shoot me an email. My email is seanla@microsoft.com. So key thing I want you guys to leave with is if you want to get the best resources for getting started are at dev.office.com. Thank you.